We have a very special guest on this edition of Overtime, Steve Carroll, USA Hockey's Minnesota District Goalie-in-Chief, among other titles, is on board with us today. And we're going to talk a little bit about what he does, his role. We're going to talk about Carroll Goalie Schools, which is an awesome outlet for young goaltenders to learn and develop. And we're going to get into the position a little bit, as sometimes I believe that it's a little bit of an overlooked position. So, Steve, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
You know, first of all, let's get into your background. Your resume is quite impressive. You played on the state tournament team in Edina, and then you went on to play at Minnesota State Mankato, then known as Mankato State. Were an All-American there, won the NCAA Division II championship. Correct. Where was that at?
It was actually held in Elmira, New York.
What type of rink were you in there?
Well, it was their home rink. It was kind of a bubble-like structure, I remember, because the game was actually carried on ESPN. Early days of ESPN.
And where was I? I was a junkie then at that.
Yeah, but you were probably, if you weren't up at 3 in the morning when they played, it wasn't broadcast live. It was taped delayed because they were just looking for content back then. So they televised the NCAA Division II national tournament from, I think it was Horseheads, but Elmira College was the host school. It was a bubble-like structure, and they had kind of yellow lighting, which was really strange. The lights were low and bounced off the ceiling. So there was all kinds of shadows on the ice. So it wasn't a good TV venue. But
how about goaltending venue? Could you see the puck?
You could. But like I said, there was more shadows out there than you're probably used to seeing. But we dealt with it.
Talk about a stressful situation. Yeah. Before we finish up your resume, can you tell us some of the characters or some of the people or players on your squad that our listenership and the state of hockey here would be familiar with? Were there any big names on that squad?
Well, you're talking the Mankato.
Yeah,
one. Well, most of the guys on our team were from Minnesota. We had one guy from Iowa who was kind of the legend. Steve Loomis was his name. But we had Mike Weinkauf, who was an All-American defenseman, played over at Hopkins Eisenhower, I think, back then. We had three guys from the Robbinsdale, Armstrong, Cooper area, Larry Long, Greg Larson, and Paul Mattson were outstanding players. We had Steve Ferletti, who played at Roseville Kellogg. And we had Johnny Passolt, who was his brother Jeff is on the television news here in the Twin Cities, but Johnny was top scorer in the Lake Conference. I think started his career at the University of Minnesota and transferred down to play with us.
John, of course, close personal friend. I'll go sit on you there.
Yeah.
And still thinks he can score.
He could score.
He still thinks he can.
Talk about back checking?
No.
He doesn't talk
no,
about
no, that's not part of the no. not part of the pedigree.
But he had that scores knack, and he was an unbelievable scorer and one of our top players on the national championship team. Yeah.
Well, great stuff. So you were there, you had a tryout with the Minnesota North Stars, free agent tryout. I think Lou Nanny is said on our Minnesota Hockey on Demand show. Extended that to you as a kid growing up in Edina, Minnesota, with Al Shaver doing the play-by-play from Gump Worsley to Cesar Maniago. I mean, what did that mean to you to even have that chance?
Well, it was unbelievable to be invited. When I got the certified letter from the North Stars, I'm like, what is this? Am I a season ticket holder, or what are you getting at here to get a certified letter from the North Stars? And it was inviting me to a free agent tryout with the North Stars, which was held either at Bloomington Ice Gardens, or I think that's primarily where the tryout was. And back then, it happened to be the year that Don Beaupré was a rookie, so he got a little bit more attention than the free agent guys did. But it was cool. I remember they put the goalies in one room to dress, and pretty much we scrimmaged. That was the tryout. You just scrimmaged, and so they put the goalies in one room. And I remember putting on my stuff from Mankato, my equipment, and I'm like, really? This is what I'm wearing, and this is what you're wearing. And one of the guys had his equipment on, and I remember this. And then he put a big piece of fiberglass across his chest. And I'm like, you know, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I just like a little extra protection under my chest protector. I'm like, you are kidding me. I thought I was going to get killed because I had just basic equipment back then.
You had the old, like, baseball chest pad that you could squish.
Absolutely.
And you had the arm pads with the openings where it hurt when it hit you.
In the gaps. And now he's got the flak jacket on for a chest protector.
He's going Espo on you.
He's going Espo. And then he's going extra fiberglass underneath that. And I'm like, this is good. I'm going to get killed.
Because you're thinking these shots are going to be. Yeah. But were they any different than what you saw in college? Not really.
I would say the high-end guys, no. I would say the big difference was that more guys could shoot the puck. You know, on my college team, there was, you know, a handful of guys that could really fire the biscuit, then some other guys that, you know, weren't quite as good at firing the biscuit, and then there were some other guys that didn't have to worry about scoring very often.
Yeah, it's not like he knew who they were, too.
Yeah,
it's not like he had many shots off. I mean, not that you ever really do, but I mean, you know when you could be overpowered in a situation. But everybody was like that.
Everyone was like that. And what I learned from there is that I was there for a week, and I thought, I mean, I did fine because of the scrimmages, and you can hide your weaknesses, I suppose, in the scrimmages. But one of the things they told me at the end of camp, Pete, was that I needed to work on my angles. And I'm like, okay.
Who told you?
I can't remember.
Was it a goalie coach?
No, we didn't have goalie. Gump was there.
Oh, was he?
Gump was
Figure
there
head.
Watching. Yeah. Then Gump was my nickname, but Gump was there watching. It wasn't him that told me. I can't remember if it was Ted Hampson or one of the other scouts. They said that you know, I did a nice job, but when you go back to college, one thing to look at working on is your angles. And I'm like, well, help me understand what are you thinking? He said, well, what we saw here from the stands is that you were off your angles by 6 inches. I'm like, really? And he said, yeah. And right now, the guys on the ice going through the tryout, they didn't know that. But once that word got around, they'd have you for lunch. 6 inches. I was off my angles. And what I was doing was kind of favoring to my glove side.
Mm-hmm.
So I was probably 6 inches more to my blocker side, encouraging players to shoot to my strong side.
Because you wanted to get the glove going.
Yeah, I wanted to get
my
glove
going. I
think
every goalie did that in that era.
Could be. And it worked on occasion. It was fine. It didn't cause really any problems during the scrimmages there. But he said that if you were going to play at that next level, you need to figure out your angles, because once the word got out that you were off of your angles by 6 inches, they'd have you for lunch.
They'd know what they'd do, and they could put it where they want to.
Absolutely.
And the interesting part is, obviously, you played, I just get this out there too, at Edina High School, we're on the part of the Hall of Fame there, and you've also been coaching this position for 29 years, so a lot of knowledge. You take a little thing like that, I'm sure you walked out of there saying, well, what do you know? You know, to a degree, but on the same token, I guess in today's terms, that's the same as saying being square to the puck.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know. I was a college kid at a pro tryout. And I was like, really? I'm a college kid at a pro tryout from a Division II school on top of that. So I'm like all eyes and all ears, listening what I can and trying to figure out how I could get better. And so when they told me that I needed to work on my angles, it's like, oh, all right, I'll get working on my angles. Pretty cool stuff.
So you finished up your college career, and then did you get into coaching right away?
I did get into coaching, actually back in Edina. Started youth hockey and worked with Dick Bluestein, actually.
Oh, wow.
How about that for a name?
The legend.
The legend, Dick Bluestein, back then. He was the squared A coach. Mm-hmm. And somehow, I don't remember how we hooked up, but we got together, and I helped him with his goalies and kind of got involved there. I remember Casey Hankinson was on the team back in the day. And so, you know, did some of the assistant coaching and the goalie coaching, and then kind of started my own goalie development program in the mid 90s, and it's kind of taken off ever since.
So what has been the biggest challenge as far as putting that together, whether it's coaches, players, what's been the toughest part of making that go over the years?
The goalie school?
Yeah, when you first started.
Credibility. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of competition out there, and to be able to establish a program that people respect and people will want to come to takes a lot of hard work. And we always talk about we have to be organized and we have to have a good presentation. And we're going now into our 17th year of providing goalie development programs for boys and girls of all abilities and pretty much all age levels. And I think that if we weren't delivering a quality product, that we wouldn't still be attracting the number of kids that we do every year.
Well, that's the great part about it. I always say there's the paying customer and the playing customer. You kind of have two, and you have to keep them both happy. And they talk.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the best compliment you can get is when nobody tells anybody about you because they don't want them to know, you know, because it's a competitive deal. But when you look back to when you played and to how the positions evolved, has anything really changed in your diction or dictation of what you're teaching to these kids? Or is it kind of the same right now?
A lot of the stuff is the same. But the big change is obviously the use of the legs. You know, when I played, we used skate saves.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the leg pads were there to stop the shots, usually off the ice. If they were on the ice, we used our stick or turned our skate blade out to try to get our skate blade on it. Today, most of the kids use the butterfly technique. And so,
can I ask you about that? Because I've looked at that and I see those old films, having done the skate save, Warren Strelo just shoving it down your grill, and you did it, and you did it. I thought it was highly effective. Why is it ineffective now?
Well, I think you get into percentages. Mm-hmm. So your skate blade's 12 inches, maybe 14 inches long versus your leg pad, which is 32 inches, 34 inches long. So just by that, you cover more space by having your leg pad down. And back in the day when I played, you had to be kind of a gymnast to be able to get your legs in a position where your leg pads would sit flat on the ice. Yep. Today, the equipment is built and designed in such a way that it kind of rotates on the knee or on the legs, so they don't have to be as acrobatic as they used to, so they can just drop and the pads kind of rotate by themselves to set up on the ice, so it makes it easier from that standpoint.
You used to have to turn from the inside of your knees to the outside of your hips to get down. To create the pads to butterfly out. We were all doing it, but just not as often.
Yeah, and it wasn't a natural movement. And
it's tiring, too.
It's tiring, and it just didn't feel right to kind of do that and try to make a save that way. And then you were kind of out on an island, because now you're down. Now what do you do? Mm-hmm. They didn't have the movements on how you move laterally.
Yep.
It was like you went down, and then somehow you got back up again and got back into position. And today, when they go down into the butterfly position, there's all sorts of lateral movements that they can do to get square to the puck.
So when you take a look at a little kid, let's say squirt level, when you see him and you take a look at his skill sets, what do you see in a kid out of the box when you say, ooh, this kid could be something? What do they possess?
Well, all goalies, I like to want goalies to be athletes. I like to have the best athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, right now, if a youth hockey coach took their leading scorer on the team and put the leg pads on them, I think they'd be fine. They'd just be fine. They won't do it.
I know. Of course
they
not.
Won't do Come it, on. But they'd be fine. So I like to, for a good goalie, I like him to be athletic. Mm-hmm. I like him to be coachable. I like him to be willing to listen and learn. I like him to also have a sense of competitiveness that, you know, let's have a sense of pride. They're going to earn whatever they're going to get on you and not just kind of hang out because the pads are cool or whatever. We're going to compete and make them earn, make them beat you. And those are some of the things that I look for.
Yeah, we talked about that in Anton Hudobin before we started this. I asked you if you'd seen the game against the Vancouver Canucks, and it was a flailing Dominic Hasek, as you mentioned, fish out of water performance. And I said everybody was sort of chuckling at what they were seeing, and the Canucks were completely confused by how he got there. But the word you said was?
Compete.
That's what he did.
He compete. And the other thing I think that caused the people to wonder what's going on back there is that Backstrom and Theodore were almost the exact opposites. They're very under control. They minimize their movement. They're always in position. You'll rarely see them on the ESPN highlight.
Backstrom especially.
Exactly.
That guy's the most efficient goalie in the league.
Exactly period. Right. Where, the Hudobin is a little more acrobatic, and that's fine. Dominic Hasek was a little more acrobatic, and he got her done too.
So Snow Angels, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. I mean, I have a picture in some of the presentations that I use that has Hasek on his back with his leg up in the air. And it was like, wouldn't it just be fun if your goalie at least tried that move?
He's prone. He didn't give up.
Yeah, and that's what I like in goalies that just have that desire to compete and never, ever give up.
So you look for an athlete with a competitive spirit out of the box.
Yeah.
No questions. And then from there, obviously there's other things, but then from there, when you get into how technical do you get with a goaltender? Do you like to just let it happen or do you say, you really got to do 1, 2, and 3 to get to 4?
Well, the way I like to teach is I like to teach them how to play instead of tell them how to play, because I feel that I can't play for them. So I can't go to their road game and play the game for them. So I like to get them to think about what they're supposed to be doing and use their instincts to get the job done and give them ideas on save selection or plays that they might make based on the situation. Instead of saying, in this situation, you always go down to your blocker side and your stick is here and your glove is here and so on and so forth. Because no matter what happens, it never happens away in a game.
Intangibles. You can't control it. You know, it's not a formula. I always say if it were a math formula, then you're set.
Right.
But there's just too many moving parts, deflections, bodies, sticks,
right,
angles, whatever occurs that way. So,
you know, so we often see coaches will set up with pucks right in the slot area and fire away on the goalie. And they're going to give their goalie a good workup because they're going to see a lot of pucks. And that's fine. There's some value in that. But what happens now? You get into that game and the kid never sees a shot from the slot, which happens.
Mm-hmm.
Now what does he do? Because he just saw 75 shots in practice from the slot area and now they're going to shoot from the dot.
Well, now, and he doesn't even know how to get there.
Maybe.
Or what's an angle.
Yeah. So anyway, I try to teach them and get them to think a little bit about what they're doing instead of telling them exactly what to do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I was at Strelo, I always used to wonder why they'd make us start with our back to the shooter, mm-hmm, and he'd move,
yeah,
you know, and they'd say go. You have to hear where his voice was to find him. I'm thinking, when am I going to ever use this in a game is what I kept thinking. But now that I'm older, I understand the exercise is about reaction and about recovery.
Yeah,
is really what that was.
And we use that drill, and maybe it came from Strelo. I don't recall where we got that drill, but we often use that drill. And it's the reaction piece, and it's also the being able to move under control. Mm-hmm. You're going to have your back to the play, and now you have to move to where the play is under control. You can't stand up. You can't kind of look around. You have to pivot and get your body square to make that save. It's a cool drill.
Back on the control from that drill, you know, we kind of talked about Backstrom, and I use him with the goalies that I have on my teams. I say, you know, if you really want to know, in my opinion, how the position should look, if there is such a creature, watch how he plays, watch how he handles pressure in all the situations he's under. Am I overselling him, or would you agree that he's a very good one for young goaltenders to watch in that perspective?
He really is, and I think what I talk to when I talk to goalies about watching Backstrom is how he gets himself in position. How do you think that
mm-hmm.
happens?
Not by mistake.
It's through skating.
Mm-hmm.
And so when kids balk at the skating piece, because we like to work on the skating piece, because I think that's, if not the most important, second or third.
It is.
You know, you got to know how to skate.
It is.
And I'm not talking about being able to sprint between blue line to blue line. I'm talking about being able to move side to side, back, forward, pivot, up, down, whatever you need to do. It's skating, and that's what Nick Backstrom does such a good job of, is getting his body in position through skating.
You just watch it. Young goalies, just next time he's healthy without a hip,
yeah,
check it out. And that is, to me, exactly what – you get from point A to point B. And you know, we talked on the show about pucks that hit you in the crest. If you're in good position, usually it's hitting you in the crest.
Right. Yeah, and that's why, like I said, we won't see Backstrom on ESPN's top 10 saves of the week very often, if ever, because he's always in position. And the guys you see in the top 10 saves are usually out of position in some sort of desperation save they're making. Competing, but desperation save they're making to get that save in.
Very Dominic Hasek like. We got to get rolling here. We're running out of time. So a couple more things I want to cover.
Sure.
First of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do in the summer? You mentioned that on the Minnesota Hockey On Demand show. Very interesting stuff with the top players in the state, the top goalies.
Well, one of the things we do here for Minnesota Hockey is we run the Minnesota Hockey Reebok High Performance Dave Peterson's Advanced Goalie Camp. what we do is we invite our Minnesota's top high school goalies, boys and girls, to come to Blaine for a weekend of goalie development. And we get 50 goalies, 25 boys, 25 girls, and they get 9 hours of on-ice instruction and 9 hours of off-ice instruction on anything from plyometrics to yoga to mental toughness to nutrition. And the coaching staff is made up of Minnesota's top college and high school goalie coaches. And we all kind of work together. I serve as the director of the program, and I bring in the other goalie school guys. I'm fine with bringing in the other goalie school guys. And that in itself is kind of a unique dynamic,
mm-hmm.
because in the business world, we're competitors. But for this weekend, we're kind of all in it for the same reason, to give back and help develop Minnesota goalies. And we had 17 goalie coaches there last year, and it's we asked the kids to come with an open mind, listen and learn, and take whatever you can out of this camp to help your game. And, you know, it's starting to pay off. You know, some of our graduates are starting to make a name for themselves beyond our camp. A number of our kids are playing Division I hockey. Two of the kids that have been through the camp have been drafted by NHL teams, and you know, I think more on the way. And I think it's a cool camp, and it's named after Dave Peterson, the legendary Minneapolis mm-hmm. Southwest coach who did so many great things for Southwest, and then was 2-time Olympic men's hockey coach, and he was always passionate about goaltending. And we mentioned this on when we talked about the show, but his wife, Dave passed away, I think, in 1997, but his wife often comes to the camp, and it's really an emotional gathering when she comes. She usually comes with her daughter and some of their other relatives, and she gets so emotional seeing that we're carrying on what her husband kind of started and would love to see and be so excited to see that's still happening here in Minnesota. It's pretty cool.
What a great, you know, I think I'm plugged in, and when you think you are, you're not. Yeah. I didn't even know it existed. Yeah. So I'm looking really forward to it. We're bringing our cameras out this summer. We're going to get our viewers here on the Hub an opportunity to see exactly what's happening. I think this position, we all do, is so critical to the game. And if there's a way we can get more kids playing and get parents to realize, me being one of them who wouldn't let my kid put the pads on, that, yeah, it's great to score goals, or you have, like you said, the fast track to the show or whatever it is, as the slick defense or the goal scorer, whatever it is. The goaltending position can be, in my opinion, what you make of it. It's up to you.
Really can be. And I think often why we see reluctance by kids to get involved is because the parents they don't want to, well, maybe the expense is part of it, understandable. But two, we also see that parents maybe don't want to become a goalie parent and have to live and die with the wins and losses of their son or daughter in the net. And sometimes, like I said, I think the kids will be just fine.
And you know what I'll say to that too? It's funny because I've thought about that. And, you know, so here I was, I didn't want to be in that position either as a parent. And I just, you know, did what I did.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm a defenseman parent. It's no different. You know, right. Because when you get buzzed, you know, everybody sees your pants and your jock strap up at the blue when they score.
Right.
So it's really no different. You know, it's letting it go and letting it be for the kids, I think, is the most important. And if they want to play, get them in it. I know a lot of programs have some form of assistance or ability to get kids equipment, training. You know, every program's working hard to get the Carroll Goalie School, mm-hmm. whatever they can find to come in and help out with their program. So it's a valuable tool to use.
Yeah, and I think that when I talk to associations, I encourage them, if the resources are available, to make sure that they have the latest and greatest equipment available for the kids, not the ones that are still in good shape they've had for 10
Look
years.
Good.
They, you know, the one, you know, they just had them and they never get worn out, so we'll just throw the pads on the kids. But the kids are fascinated by the equipment, totally. Absolutely fascinated by the equipment. So do what they can to encourage that excitement. And then if there's more resources, try to get them the goalie helmets. And if you can, decorate them in your association colors.
Totally.
I mean, again, the kids are fired up about it. And they'll be excited about playing the position.
Very simple thing is packaging. I remember the first goalie I ever saw that caught my eye was probably 3 or 4 years old at a North Stars Hawks game. It was Tony Esposito.
Yep.
And I remember looking at those pads. I can still remember it because I've relived it so much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember saying to my dad, I want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just it captivated me and it grabbed me. And I don't think that's any different for kids.
No, it's not. I mean, you look at the equipment they have, today's equipment, the color-coded equipment, and, you know, I mean, it's cool to wear. I mean, it just really is. And to be honest, it's in a lot of ways, it's the safest position in hockey.
Oh, I think it is.
Because of the equipment, but most injuries occur because of the contact.
Yep.
Shoulder to shoulder, knee to knee, shoulder to boards. Whatever, that's where a lot of the injuries occur. Goaltending, well, they do run into the goalie more than they probably should
yeah.
today, but it's a pretty safe equipment to the helmet. The headgear is
great. Kevlar, head to toe.
It's, yeah, you know, so they rarely feel the puck. And so.
Well, how good would you have been?
I don't know.
Unstoppable. Still playing. That's what it would be. So tell us how what your products are at Carroll Goalie School and then how you can get involved with the program.
Well, during the winter season, we run Youth Hockey Association goalie clinics and private instruction for families who are interested in some specialized instruction for their son or daughter. And then in the summer and fall, we run weekend camps at Richfield and then the Schwann Super Rink up in Blaine. And those are three-day, two-hour-a-day clinics where we do have an advanced skill program in September. And then in October, actually, we run a girls' high school program for just girls' high school goalies. And that's the weekend right before the season starts, and that always fills up as the girls want to get that last little tune-up before the season starts. And if people want more information, they can visit us on the World Wide Web. We do have a website. It's www.carroll. Two R's, two L's, GS, goalieschool.com, or carolgs.com.
And you got a Facebook page?
We do got a Facebook page. That's kind of cool. We're into the social media now.
I like it. I like it.
And YouTube. We got a YouTube page, and we got a blog going, too. So we're
well, that YouTube of your career is really cool.
We did put that together. It's, you know, back in the day, I played in 1977, and that was the early days of videotape machines. Yeah. And so we actually have the videotapes of those three games. We played Roseau and Neil Broughton in the opener. We played Don Lucia and Grand Rapids in the semis. And then we lost to John Marshall in the finals.
Lisey?
Lisey, yeah. He went shelf on me and went breakaway on
me.
Who
didn't he?
but it was still cool. But we had those games on videotape. And then, like I said, my national championship game at Mankato was televised by ESPN, and I got the broadcast tape from that. So we were able to do a little magical editing job and put the little highlight package together, and it is on our YouTube site.
I'm going to stick it up here with the segment, too, so you'll see it. Oop, there goes the phone. So I'll make sure it's hooked up on that, too, as well. Anything else? Any final thoughts here on the position before we bid everybody adieu?
No, I think it's been great. I appreciate the time and opportunity to talk about goaltending here in Minnesota.
We're going to bring you back. I could talk for hours. Steve Carroll, thanks for joining us here on the Overtime Radio Network. We'll have more coming up right after this. Period number two on the MNHockeyHub.com.